Phantom Doubleday Dell Audio Publishing presents Star Wars, The Krytos Trap, Book 3 of the X-Wing series, by Michael A. Stackpole. Commander Wedge Antilles would have preferred the ceremony to be private. Rogue Squadron had come to mourn the passing of one of their own on the week anniversary of his death. Wedge had wanted the gathering to be small and intimate. An opportunity for Corran Horn's friends to share remembrances of him, but that was not possible. Corran's death had come during the liberation of Coruscant. That made him a hero from a company of heroes. Therefore, the bureaucrats who organized the memorial service had turned it into the focal point of mourning for the entire New Republic. Corran Horn was a hero, they proclaimed loudly, but he was also a victim who represented all the victims of the Empire. The ceremony grew out of all proportion. Special grandstands had been grafted to nearby buildings. Holocams had been put in position so the ceremony could be recorded and replayed on countless worlds. Despite the very real fears about contracting the highly contagious Krytos virus, the stands were filled to overflowing. Wedge looked up from his position on the reviewing stand and out to the members of Rogue Squadron. In addition to the elite corps of pilots, Corran's other friends had come to pay tribute to him. Ayala Wasiri, a slender brown-haired woman who had been his Corsac partner, stood next to Mirax Terek. Even though Mirax was the daughter of a notorious Corellian smuggler, she and Corran had become friends. Wedge could see she'd fallen hard for the young pilot, and the lifeless expression on her face made his heart ache. The only one who was missing is Tycho. Wedge frowned. Captain Tycho Selku had served as Rogue Squadron's executive officer. He'd surreptitiously joined the mission to Coruscant at Wedge's request, and had been instrumental in bringing the planet's defenses down. Unfortunately, Alliance intelligence had developed evidence that Tycho was working for the Empire. Wedge had not been fully apprised of the evidence against Tycho, but he did not doubt the man's innocence for a second. In spite of the liberation, Coruscant was not a pleasant or stable world. A hideous epidemic, the Krytos virus, was ravaging the non-human population. Bacta could cure the virus, but the rebellion's entire store of the medicinal fluid was insufficient to treat everyone who suffered. This resulted in panic among aliens, and resentment against humans for their apparent immunity to the disease. A Bothan protocol subaltern waved Wedge forward, and he stepped up to the podium. He wanted to lean heavily on it. Years of fighting and saying goodbye to friends and comrades weighed him down, but he refused to give in to fatigue. His pride in the squadron and his friendship with Corran kept him upright. He looked at the crowd, then focused on the mound of granite rubble before him.
Corran Horn does not rest easy in that grave. Corran was never at ease except when he was fighting, and there is much fighting yet to be done. We have taken Coruscant, but anyone who assumes that means the Empire is dead is as mistaken as Grand Moff Tarkin was in his belief that Alderaan's destruction would cripple the rebellion. Corran Horn was not a man who gave up, no matter what the odds. More than once, he took upon himself the responsibility of dealing with a threat to the squadron and to the rebellion. Heedless of his own safety, he engaged overwhelming forces, and by sheer dint of will and spirit and courage, he won.
Wedge opened his hands to take in all those assembled at the monument.
You must do what Corran did. Fight anything and everything that would give the Empire a chance to reassert itself. If Corran Horn is ever to know peace, it will only be when we all know peace.
Down at the gravesite, an honor guard raised the squadron flag, then backed away and saluted. That signaled an end to the ceremony, and people began to drift away. A cream-furred boffin with violet eyes crossed to where Wedge stood and nodded almost graciously.
You were quite eloquent, Commander Antilles.
Borsk Phalia waved a hand toward the departing masses.
I have no doubt quite a few hearts were stirred by your words.
Wedge raised an eyebrow.
But not yours, Counselor Phalia.
The boffin snorted a laugh.
If I were so easily swayed, I could be convinced to back all sorts of nonsense.
Like the trial of Tycho Selkru. Phalia's fur rippled at the back of his neck.
No, I might be convinced that such a trial was not necessary. Admiral Akbar has not persuaded you to abandon your petition to the Provisional Council about this matter?
Wedge folded his arms across his chest.
No.
The boffin's eyes narrowed.
You're moving into a realm of warfare at which I am a master, Commander. Your petition will fail. Captain Selkru will be tried for murder and treason.
High up in a tower suite, above the surface of Imperial Center, Kirtan Lure allowed himself a smile. At this height, his only companions were Hawkbats in their shadowed roots, and special intelligence operatives who were menacing despite their lack of stormtrooper armor. He felt alone and aloof. At the top of the world, he had been given all he could see to command and dominate and destroy. Before fleeing Imperial Center in the Rebellion attack, Issani Isard had given him the job of creating and leading a Palpatine counterinsurgency front. With the PCF, he could disrupt the functioning of the New Republic. He could slow their takeover of Coruscant and hamper their ability to master the mechanism of galactic administration. A bother, minor but vexatious, is what Isard had intended he become. Kirtan Lure knew that he had to become more. From his vantage point, he looked down on the distant blob of dignitaries and mourners gathered at the memorial for Corrin Horn. While he despised them all for their politics, he joined them in mourning Horn's loss. Horn had been Lure's nemesis on Corellia, where they both served in the Corellian Security Force, or Corsac, and Lure had spent a year and a half trying to hunt him down after he fled that world. When Isard had brought Lure to Imperial Center, he had anticipated a renewal of his private little war with Horn. Horn's partner, Ayala Wasiri, was another Corsac agent Lure had hunted, and her presence on Imperial Center gave him pause. She had never been as relentless as Horn in pursuit of criminals, but that had always seemed to Lure to be because she was more thorough, and that made her more dangerous. He picked up a remote device from the table and flipped it on. A couple of small lights flashed, then a red button glowed. Lure smiled as his thumb hovered over the device for a second, but then he gently returned it to the table. Isard had pointed out on numerous occasions that only by destroying the Rebellion would it be possible to reassert the Empire's authority over the galaxy. Destroying the Rebellion required methods more subtle than exploding grandstands and planets, accomplishing with a vibroblade what could not be done with a Death Star. Rogue Squadron could not be allowed to die, at least not yet, because they were required for the public spectacle of Tycho Selkru's trial. General Aaron Kraken, the Director of Allied Intelligence, had uncovered ample evidence that pointed toward Selkru's guilt, and Lure had delighted in clearing the way for Kraken's investigators to find still more of it. The evidence would be so questionable that the members of Rogue Squadron would decry it as false. That would increase tension between the conquerors of Imperial Center and the politicians who slunk in after the pilots had risked their lives to secure the world. The Krytos virus further complicated things. Created by Evir Derakos, an Imperial scientist under Lure's supervision, it killed non-humans in a hideous manner. The victim's flesh sagged and split open while they bled from every orifice. The price of Bacta, the only remedy for the virus, had shot up, and supplies dwindled as people hoarded the medicine. Lure had taken the precaution of putting away a supply of Bacta, which he was selling off in small lots. As a result, anxious rebels were supplying the financing for an organization bent on the destruction of the New Republic. The irony of it all was sufficient to dull the omnipresent fear of discovery and capture. Now, Kirtan Lure would strike from hiding, hitting at targets chosen seemingly at random. Today he would destroy the grandstands around the memorial. They would largely be empty, and everyone would breathe a sigh of relief that they had not been blown up minutes earlier. But in the future, everyone would consider it dangerous to congregate in a public place. By choosing targets of minimal value, Lure could stir the populace to demand that the military do something. If the public's ire focused on a particular official, he could target that person, giving the public some power. Theirs would be a symbiotic relationship. He would be nightmare and benefactor. They would be victims and supporters. Again, he took up the remote control and went to the window. He allowed one woman to clear the blast radius around the memorial. Then pressed the button. A series of explosions went off around the memorial. The grandstands teetered and started to somersault into the depths of Imperial Center. The people who had been seated on them fell like colorful confetti and lay moaning and bleeding amidst the ruined grandstands. Other explosions twisted metal and shattered transparent-steel windows in the surrounding buildings. Lure finally felt the blast shockwave send a tremor through his tower. The Hawkbats flapped black wings to steady themselves, then dropped away from their perches. Lure smiled. Good hunting. He knew the creatures would first look to see if the holes in the buildings revealed previously hidden granite slugs. But when deprived of their favorite prey, they would settle for the gobbets of flesh left behind by the victim. It seemed to Wedge that the mood of the Provisional Council was as dark as the room in which they met, and as sour as the scent of Bacta in the air. The dimly lit chamber had been redecorated by Imperial agents in garish reds and purple, with green and gold trim, but the paucity of light quelled the riot of color. The Council had arranged the tables in a half-hexagonal formation, with Mon Mothma in the middle, flanked by Princess Leia and Corellia's Doman Beiris. Admiral Ackbar and Borsk Phalia anchored the far ends of the tables. This left Wedge to stand in the open area before the Council, as if he were the one on trial. Mon Mothma inclined her head toward him. "Please, Commander, speak your mind." Wedge took a deep breath. "I've come here today to ask you to prevent a gross injustice. Captain Tycho Selku is a hero of the Rebellion. If it were not for his efforts, we would not be here right now, and I would be dead. The man he's accused of killing is someone whose life Tycho saved on numerous occasions. Tycho is innocent, and to put him through this trial after all he has endured would be cruelty on a truly Imperial scale." Mon Mothma nodded slowly. "I appreciate your frankness, Commander, and have no doubt you believe everything you've told us. Before we can make any sort of decision, it would be useful for us to have a better grasp of the facts surrounding the situation." She pointed to a green-eyed man whose once red hair was now mostly white. "If you would, General Kraken, please bring the Council up to date." Aaron Kraken walked over to stand next to Wedge. "Tycho Selku is a native of Alderaan who graduated from the Imperial Naval Academy and was made a TIE fighter pilot. Subsequent to the destruction of his home world, he defected from Imperial service and joined the Rebellion. He served with distinction at Hoth, and accompanied Commander Antilles on the assault on the Death Star at Endor. Slightly less than 2 years ago, Selku volunteered for a covert scouting mission to Coruscant. On the way back out, he was captured and sent to Asani Isard's Lusankia facility. Little is known about this prison, though people who have come from it have routinely been brainwashed into becoming Imperial agents who commit acts of murder and mayhem at Isard's bidding." Wedge shook his head. "I'm sure General Kraken will not mind my pointing out that Tycho did not escape from Lusankia. Isard transferred him to the penal colony at Akratar, and he escaped from there to return to us." "Thank you, Commander. I was just getting to that. Upon his return, Captain Selku was debriefed. He recalled almost nothing of his time at Lusankia. We could find no indication he had been brainwashed by Isard. However, we had never detected brainwashing in any other victim of Lusankia. We were left in the unenviable position of having to assume the worst about Captain Selku." Kraken frowned. "Unfortunately, we have developed evidence that suggests Selku has betrayed Rogue Squadron and the New Republic. He had access to the command code for the headhunter Corran Horn was flying at the time of his death. And he had gone over the fighter, without supervision, just prior to Horn's flight. Horn confronted Selku before they headed out, threatening to uncover his treason. So Selku had him killed. We have pretty well determined that Isard wanted us to take the planet and inherit the Krytos virus, so killing Horn after the shields were down only makes sense. Moreover,
The Horn case is not the only death to which we can link Captain Selku.
Wedge's jaw dropped in surprise.
What? You can't mean Boror Jace.
Indeed I do.
Nonsense. The Empire killed him.
Kraken nodded.
Agreed.
But the way they got him was unusual. We believed previously that he was trapped by an interdicted cruiser out looking for smugglers.
However, we have been forced to amend that view following the defection of the Imperial Interdictor Cruiser Black Ass. Captain Ilor indicated in her debriefing that she was directed to go to specific coordinates to intercept Boror Jace as he headed back to Typhara. The arrangements for Jace's journey home, including the plotting of his course, were made by Captain Tycho Selku.
Wedge shook his head.
By my order.
Yes, Commander, by your order.
Which does not mean Isard could not have warped Selku enough to make him betray your people.
But that's circumstantial.
The Alliance Intelligence Chief shrugged.
We have more.
Horn told you, Commander, that he'd seen Selku here on Coruscant talking with a known Imperial operative, Kirtan Lur. Selku claimed he'd been talking to a Duro about obtaining ships for the Alliance. But Horn knew Lur well enough to recognize him.
Moreover, we have uncovered a number of bank accounts in which up to 15 million credits have accumulated, which means Selku was being paid by the Empire.
Wedge studied the council members.
I still do not believe the evidence General Kraken's people have gathered is anything more than circumstantial. This trial has gone forward with reckless speed. I know we all want swift justice, but trying Tycho on these charges right now can only hurt him and, ultimately, the New Republic.
Domon Bayrus, her pale eyes blinking coldly in the dim light, opened her hand.
Your opinion, Commander Antilles, is respected, but not universally held. The evidence is sufficient in any jurisdiction of the galaxy to call for a trial.
Wedge's eyes narrowed as he sensed a transparacial barrier descending between his argument and the Council's willingness to act on it. He knew he had to get them to see clearly.
This evidence may demand a trial, but at least delay it until there is time to scrape things down another layer or two and find out what's really going on. I think that is the minimum courtesy you owe someone like Tycho Selku, and that's an opinion I do not need to keep private.
Borsk Felia's head came up and his fur rippled.
Are you threatening to use your status as hero to oppose us?
I was threatening to go public with my feelings about the trial, and if expressing my opinion about an injustice is not allowed in the Alliance military, I can always resign my commission.
Wedge growled.
Leia leaned forward.
Chief Counselor, I suggest we recess for an hour. I would like a chance to speak with Commander Antilles, if I might.
General Kraken left the room last and closed the doors, leaving Wedge alone with Princess Leia. He turned to her.
If you want to convince me to save my career, Princess, I appreciate the effort, but I'll stand by what I said. You can't talk me out of it.
She shook her head.
I know that, so I'm not going to try.
It's important to me that you know I think Tycho is innocent too.
Then help me convince them to stop or delay it.
Leia's shoulders slumped.
I would if I could, but I can't. You may not realize how fragile the New Republic is right now. With her Krytos virus, Asani Isard has succeeded in driving a wedge between humans and non-humans. That shouldn't have anything to do with Tycho, but it does. Because Tycho is a human accused of a heinous crime against a fellow rebel and a man who is now a hero. If we do not bring him to trial quickly and let the trial take its course, we will be accused of favoring a human.
So Tycho gets offered up as a sacrifice to keep the Alliance together?
I would have preferred being able to put Asani Isard on trial for creating Krytos virus, but she got away. The logic of Leia's argument was inescapable, but Wedge bristled at it and didn't want to back down.
Perhaps resigning is something I have to do.
You won't resign, dear heart, because of the same sense of responsibility that makes you threaten to resign. Leia smiled at him.
Kraken's people have been doing more than looking into Tycho's activities. Turns out that Warlord Zinj hit a Typharan Bacta convoy and stole a fairly big shipment. An Ashern rebel was on the convoy and got word out to us about the location of the space platform where Zinj has the convoy docked. The Bacta will save a lot of people,
but getting our operatives in and back out means someone very good is going to have to fly cover for our strike.
Rogue Squadron will be leading the way.
Wedge nodded. Resign and do millions, or stay and watch a friend be destroyed. Not much of a choice.
Not so, my friend. It is indeed quite a choice, and not an easy one.
As Wedge entered the darkened briefing room, the pilots of Rogue Squadron broke from the knot surrounding Nuora Venn and took their places. Nuora, a Twi'lek who had been a lawyer before joining Rogue Squadron, was defending Tycho at the trial. The members of the squadron, knowing that Nuora had just been to the prison, had been eager to hear the latest news, both about Tycho and the case. Looking the pilots over before beginning his briefing, Wedge thought that some of their expressions were difficult to read. Riv Scheel, the Shistavanan Wolfman, wore his impenetrable frown. Gavin Darklighter, the youngest pilot, seemed fairly cheerful, possibly because he was sitting very close to the attractive Bothan female, Aesir Saelar. But the hardness at the corners of his eyes betrayed the pressure most of the unit felt. Wedge stepped behind Errol Numb, then paused with the holoprojection table in front of him. I appreciate your getting here so quickly. I had hoped we'd get at least a week's liberty after the conquest of Coruscant. The fiery-haired lieutenant in the front row, Pash Kraken, spoke up. We've not had that much to celebrate, sir. I know. However, we should realize that what we're going through is nothing compared to what hundreds of thousands of people out there are suffering. Wedge pointed toward Nuora and Riv Scheel, then glanced back at Errol Numb. Three of our own came down with this Krytos virus, but they got treatment quickly enough to knock it out. Bacta is in high demand right now, but supplies are very short. Irisi Dalaret, the dark-haired pilot whose Typharan family owned a large Bacta cartel, raised a hand. I know the cartels are producing as much as they can. At least the Zucfra group is. I have personally sent messages to my grandfather to let him know of the need for Bacta here. Thanks, Irisi. Every bit of help we can get is vital. Wedge folded his arms across his chest. Warlord Zenge hit a Bacta convoy heading out from Typhara. I believe it was from the Zaltin group, Irisi, not your family's corporation. Zenge took the Bacta to a storage facility. But a member of the Ashern rebel group, terrorist, Irisi spat, happened to be crewing aboard one of the Zaltan ships. He managed to get a message out concerning the location of the space station Zenge is using. Wedge nodded toward Errol, and the Solistan punched up an image of the disc-shaped station on the holoprojector. Slender towers rose from the middle of the disc, suggesting the station had been impaled on spears. The Bacta is being held here, in the Yagdul system, and we're going to get it away from them. As Wedge continued his briefing, little glowing icons representing ships hovered around the station. We will be leading in two squadrons from General Salm's Defender Wing to pull a quick strafing run on the station and get them to scramble their fighters. One of Defender Wing's squadrons has been refitted with B-Wings. We pull the TIEs out and away from the station, and the B-Wings will drop on them and help us kill them. The Y-Wings will start working on the station's defenses with their ion cannons. Following us in will be a half-dozen assault shuttles and then enough bolt cruisers to haul the Bacta away. This is a hit, hold, then run operation. Gavin smiled. Sounds like a do-run. Pash Kraken leaned forward in his chair. Where's the Iron Fist supposed to be? Wedge shook his head. I've been given no data concerning the Iron Fist. Warlord Zinj's flagship was one of the super-class Star Destroyers. If it showed up at Yagdul, the operation was doomed. If the Iron Fist does show up, all we can do is pull out. As the pilot started to leave the room, Wedge caught Aesir Saelar's eye. Saelar, if I could have a moment of your time.
Yes, Commander.
Wedge watched as she said something to Gavin, then crossed toward him. There was no overt challenge in her stride, though the fire in her violet eyes did reveal a strong streak of Bothan pride. Splotches of white fur covered her from throat to belly, and flashed down from her forehead over her left eye. She stopped before him and snapped to attention. At ease, flight officer. There is something I want to discuss with you. You graduated near the top of your class from the Bothan Marshall Academy, but never formally entered the military. Your records are decidedly sketchy, but I would imagine, given your age, that you were recruited into the Marshall Intelligence Division of the Bothan military in an effort to replenish the supply of spies who died securing the plans to the second Death Star. The fact that you were already on Coruscant when our operation arrived suggests the Bothan government had its own goals here. Aesir continued to look at him without flinching.
But you forget, sir, that I did participate in the operations that cleared the way for the Rebel Alliance to take the planet.
I never accused you of being stupid, Flight Officer Saylor. Quite the contrary, I think you are very intelligent. Wedge let a smile tug at the corners of his mouth. That intelligence is why I want you in this squadron. But it's easy to see that your boss and masters also find you quite useful. That means, sooner or later, you're going to have to make some decisions about your loyalty. She gazed at him steadily.
Do you want me to make those decisions right now?
I want you to make them when you feel they need to be made. I trust you, but I want to continue to trust you. If you find you can't be part of the squadron, you can walk away, and I'll have been proud to have you as one of us.
I'll keep that in mind.
Aesir smiled, and Wedge took it for a good sign. Upon the reversion to real space, Wedge saw the space station slowly revolving in a starry void. The only variation from the holographic simulation was the appearance of a flight of four TIE starfighters patrolling the area around the station. Minot, the R5 unit in Wedge's X-Wing, screeched out a warning. Wedge keyed his comm unit. One flight, on me, Rogue 12, take the defenders in. Errol Numb replied.
As ordered.
Three, you and four have the trailer. Two, I have the lead. Target the second TIE. Rizzati Ener answered.
As ordered, Rogue Leader.
Rizzati led Erisi Dolaris in a dive and sweeping turn that took them around toward the TIEs following them. Wedge brought the X-Wing up and over in a barrel roll to port. His target did the same thing, sweeping his fighter across his wingman's flight path and momentarily blinding the second TIE. Wedge inverted the X-Wing and made a pass on the TIE fighter. Before Zinja's pilot could react, Wedge shrieked in and started shooting. The first pair of red laser bolts missed low, but the next pair swept across the ball cockpit. Wedge's third shot lanced through the transparent steel viewport, igniting and melting components and equipment. The TIE starfighter rolled into screw spiral before exploding. A second later, a blue proton torpedo ripped into the cockpit pod of the second TIE, and the fighter tumbled through the void. Wedge got a line to Errol. Nice shot, Deuce.
Thanks for the setup, lead.
Wedge brought the X-Wing around to the original heading and saw a proton torpedo from Arisi's ship finish off the TIE. Ahead, he saw streams of green laser bolts spraying out from the space station as Zinja's flyers rose on an intercept course with the Rebel fighters. Wedge heard Errol Numb's voice.
Lead, I have a dozen interceptors and 8 starfighters.
I copy, 12. Errol led the Rogues and Y-Wings up and away from the station. The squints and eyeballs came on in pursuit, eager to thin the ranks of the Y-Wings. The rest of the Rogues followed Errol through a loop that took them back toward the interceptors, while General Thalm's Y-Wing shot away from their pursuers. As the X-Wing and interceptor formations began to spread out, the B-Wings burst into real space and shot straight into the gap between the squints and the eyeballs streaming from the station. The B-Wings flashed in at the interceptors and scattered them. The Rogues pushed through the crumbling interceptor formation, shot past the B-Wings, and sailed in at the eyeball formation. Wedge dropped the X-Wing into a dive, then came around on an arc between the cloud of fighters and the station. From his vantage point at the periphery of the battle, he could see that the Rogues had hit the eyeballs hard, but Zinja's people regrouped instead of scattering. Without shields, the TIE starfighters were really no match for the X-Wing, but they were far more dangerous in a group than as individual fleeing ships. Wedge hit 2 buttons on his flight console. Minot, see if you can get me a frequency for the comm unit communications between the eyeballs. Waiting for the information he'd requested, Wedge watched the B-Wing finish off the squint and head in toward the station. The swooping, diving, rolling, and climbing fighters swarmed around the station like insects around a bright light. Wedge saw a comm unit frequency come up on his monitor and keyed his microphone. Starfighter Flight, this is Commander Antilles of the New Republic Armed Forces. If you power down your weapons, we'll consider you non-combatant. The same offer goes for the people on the station.
I copy, Antilles. My flight is disarming. I'll pass the message on to the station chief, Valsil Tor.
Oblige, Starfire.
One thing, Antilles.
Yes?
If we surrender to you, will you haul us out of here?
Don't want to be around when the Iron Fist gets here?
Not especially.
Starfighter, I have an idea. If you hire on as guards to fly cover for one of the Bacta freighters coming in, and if you can guard it all the way to Coruscant, you can be free.
You got it, Antilles.
Right on cue, a dozen and a half bulk freighters and specialty haulers came out of hyperspace and started cruising in toward the space station. Wedge arranged for Mirax Tarek to guide the eyeballs back to Coruscant. Then he looked out at the station and his squadron patrolling it. Miracle of miracles. It looked like everyone was going to make it back home again. Corrin Horn knew that sitting in the cockpit of a fighter once again should have made him happy, but it did not. He could find no fault with the fighter, nor with his being given a patrol mission. But something was wrong, and there was no way he could ignore it. Through the headphones of the simulator, he heard the voice of the woman who seemed to be his commanding officer, Isani Isard.
Nemesis 1, we have two contacts on the heading of 270 degrees. They are hostile. You are free to engage and terminate them.
As ordered. Corrin punched up the data on the incoming ship and displayed it over his monitor. Two ties.
We have additional information on the incoming ships. Transmitting now.
The image on the monitor shifted from a TIE starfighter to an X-Wing. A line of data beneath the image informed Corrin that the ship was flown by Captain T. Seltu. A jolt of adrenaline pulsed through Corrin's body. Although much of his past had been lost to him since he had arrived at this place, he knew that Tycho Seltu had betrayed Rogue Squadron, and that he himself had been determined to see him pay. He couldn't believe his luck. The coincidence of his being able to fly against Tycho and avenge Rogue Squadron was incredible. Corrin sideslipped the interceptor to starboard, then rolled up on the left wing and climbed in toward Tycho. He flipped his lasers from quad to dual fire, assuming he'd have to use multiple shots and multiple passes to bring down the man he remembered as an outstanding pilot. Anticipating Tycho's break, he hastily snapped off a blast that splashed energy over the shields as the interceptor overshot its target. No reaction. That isn't like Tycho at all, he thought. Corrin climbed into a loop, then dove, but his scanners showed the X-Wings hadn't stayed with him. He switched his targeting computer over to the second ship and saw that it was flown by Kirtan Lua. An immediate desire to bait the ship filled him, but by now his brain was beginning to work as hard as his pilot's reflexes. The last time he had flown the simulator, he had been assigned to destroy a squadron of X-Wings, which he had been happily trying to do until some part of his anesthetized brain awoke enough to recognize the Rogue Squadron shields on the ship. At that moment, he had taken his hands off the steering, an action that would have killed him if he had been in a real fight, not a simulator. Isard herself had thrown open the cockpit door and derided him as a failure, but he had been so confused about what was happening to him that he had begged her for another chance. This was it, and now it seemed his brain was a bit more awake. The Lua can't be here. The chance that Tycho and Lua would both show up where I could attack them is unbelievable. Whereas before he had taken great delight in the coincidence, now it became evident of his being manipulated. Tycho and Lua were plucked from a list of my enemies and placed in these fires. Anger flared through Corrin. First, I'm in a simulator. And second, someone knows enough about me to know who my enemies are. Pitting me against my enemies gives me some wish fulfillment and rewards behavior. But I have to ask myself, is flying an interceptor against X-Wing behavior for which I want to be rewarded? Corrin shook his head, then raised his hands from the simulator's steering yoke and yanked his helmet off. Electrodes taped to his head pulled away abruptly, taking some hair with him, but he ignored the pain. This is Nemesis 1. The game is over. I won't betray my people. The star field on the screen in front of him vanished. In its place, he saw Isani Isard's head and shoulders. Her mismatched eyes, the left one a fiery red, and the right one icy blue, were venomous.
You are under the impression, Corrin Horn, that this little victory hampers my efforts in some way. It does not. You will require more time than others I have worked with. But here at Lusankia, time is abundant. We will start with a level 4 narco interrogation and work our way down to level 1 if we must. You'll tell us whatever we want to know.
Wedge laughed aloud. Here he was, a celebrated hero, the sole survivor of both Death Star Run, conqueror of Coruscant, and leader of the most feared fighter squadron in the galaxy. And at Ayella Wasiri's door, he felt nervous. On the way over from squadron headquarters, he had convinced himself he wasn't really asking her out on a date. He'd spent the previous hour being harangued by Irisi Dilaret about the Asheron agent who had tipped him off about Warlord Zinj's access door. Wedge had done his best to explain that he had no reports about the Typharan native, and he'd promised to pass notice of her interest up to General Kraken. That really was all he could do, but Irisi took a lot of convincing on that point. He thought her reaction might have come from her frustration at not having been able to prevent Corrin's death. He knew she had been romantically interested in him, and that she had hoped their friendship would lead to something more. He pressed the door buzzer, then tugged at the cuffs of his jacket. "I'm not asking her out," he told himself. "I'm just here as a friend, visiting a friend." The door to the apartment slid open, and Wedge's nervousness fell away when he saw Ayala smile. "Wedge, this is a surprise." "A pleasant one, I hope." Wedge glanced down at his hand, then back up into her brown eyes. "I should have called before heading over, but I was going to get something to eat, and I thought, well, I hate eating alone, and..." Ayala's smile widened for a moment, then disappeared. "I think you'd better come in." Wedge followed her into a modest-sized parlor. The man sitting in the corner chair looked as if he were constructed from shadow threads. The sharpness of his features accentuated the gauntness of his frame. His shoulders and knees poked like knobs against the gray fabric of his jumpsuit. A few strands of black hair wove through the white and gray combed over his largely bald head, but did nothing to disguise the shape of the skull beneath it. Ayala introduced the two men. "Commander Wedge Antilles, this is Sirik Wasiri, my husband." "Husband?" Wedge covered his surprise by taking a step forward and extending his right hand. "My pleasure, sir." Sirik shook Wedge's hand with a long-fingered grip that was firm, though the strength faded quickly.
"The honor is mine, Commander. Your exploits bring glory to your world."
"Glory wasn't our goal, sir."
"Nonetheless..."
The man smiled, then let his hand drop back to his lap.
"Forgive me, Commander. At another point I would engage you in a lively discussion, but now I am somewhat fatigued."
Ayala walked to her husband's side and gently rested a hand on his shoulder. "The imps caught Derek up in a sweep about a year ago. They interrogated him, broke his identity, then imprisoned him. 6 months ago, they set up a bio-research project and made him part of the slave labor force. They only used humans because the lab was producing what we now know to be the Krytos virus. I only learned Derek was alive when General Kraken's people brought him here 4 hours ago." "I should be going then, and leave you two alone."
"No."
The man gently patted Ayala's hand.
"I have long been among Imperials and other slaves. It is good to have normal people here to ease me back."
The effort it cost Wedge to put up an appearance of friendly interest made him realize he had been hoping for something more than a dinner with Ayala.
"And I bet you're happy to be free."
"Happy?"
"Yes, though captivity wasn't as brutal as it's imagined to be. They can only control your body, not your mind. I knew I would be free someday."
"That's what Tycho said."
"Who?"
Ayala looked down at her husband. "The man who killed Corrin." Wedge corrected her. "The man who was on trial for killing Corrin. Your wife is working with the prosecution team." Ayala glared at Wedge. "Working to find the truth, mind you. We have found a lot to indicate Captain Selku was an Imperial agent of extreme resourcefulness." Wedge shook his head. "But there are gaps in the evidence. Everything that damns Tycho is available, but those things that would acquit him have vanished." Sirik pressed the fingertips of both hands together.
"This Tycho must be something to earn such loyalty from you."
"I feel about Tycho what Ayala feels about Korra. Hence the impasse between us."
"Impasse indeed. Still, Captain Selku sounds fascinating."
Derek's voice became wistful, and Ayala straightened up. "Don't even think it, Derek." Wedge raised an eyebrow. "What's the matter?" Anger creased Ayala's brow. "He's going to meddle."
"Meddle, is it? You see, Wedge, My vocation in life is to seek out people who fascinate me. I study them. I try to understand them. I share what understanding I have with others. Ayala's eyes narrowed. On Corellia, he found a defendant in a case fascinating. He kept after Corin and me, constantly asking us little questions that forced us to look beyond the scope of our investigation. He was right. She had been framed. She frowned at her husband. That was a different case. It wasn't on Coruscant, and you weren't weak as an Ewok cub at the time. You need to recover.
I will, dearest.
A tone sounded from the comlink clipped to the collar of Wedge's jacket. Antilles, go ahead.
Wedge, it's Mirax. I have a problem. It's on the skate, and I need you to get down here.
From the dark security of the grab car's interior, Kirtan Lure watched as four special intelligence operatives approached the building's door. One of them placed a thermite boring charge on the lock and set it, then flattened himself against the wall. A red light blinked 3 times on the charge. Then a gout of white fire burst to hissing light. One of the operatives punched a hooked pry bar through the center of the fire and yanked the door open. Then his 3 compatriots dashed through. Lure opened the grab car door and emerged. He gathered his cloak about him and pulled the hood up. He squeezed past the 2 operatives at the doorway and stepped into a room that resembled a rodent's nest. A small, balding man was pinned to the same mattress by the muzzle of a blaster. Lure looked down at him. Your surroundings are so miserable, Nodlo. I am almost moved to pity you, but then pity is wasted on the dead, isn't it? The man's brown eyes bulged with terror.
What are you talking about? I don't know you.
True. You do not know me. But you have brokered some Bacta for some friends of mine. They noted the supply of pure you returned them had gone from 95% purity to 75% purity. Nartlow tried to claw his way into a sitting position, but the operative's weapon kept him rooted in one spot.
I drew some of the Bacta off as a sample, but a deal went bad and I lost it. I figured they wouldn't believe I lost it, so I tried to cover up what I'd done. I'm sorry.
Lure took a step closer to the bed, forcing Nartlow to crane his neck to look up at him. If I refrain from killing you, you will owe me a favor.
Anything you want. Anything.
Good. You told my friends that the market for cure had crashed. Explain.
The rebels picked up a lot of cure recently. I don't know where. Rogue Squadron was involved, though. I know that much. I've been selling some of your cure to people who do business with people who work for people in the Provisional Council, see? They've been buying to keep themselves and their supporters healthy.
Lure smiled. Public health officials argued that there was no proof that pre-exposure Bacta therapy could keep someone from becoming infected with a virus, but that did nothing to stem the desire to try. Nartlow swiped his spittle, flecking the corners of his mouth.
It seems there's going to be enough now, so the provosts think they won't need their own supply.
Lure frowned. You believe this Bacta supply exists?
I think some does, sir. Yes, sir.
You will learn about it. You will go to your contacts, and this time offer to buy cure at a good price.
What if they don't want to sell?
Tell them that they will find exposure of their previous black market Bacta dealings rather painful and embarrassing. If that is insufficient, perhaps making an example of one or more of them would be persuasive. Lure nodded toward the operative to his right. Blasters have more than just a stun setting, you know? Admiral Akbar sat back in his council chair and thought about something Grand Moff Tarkin had said in one of his more expansive moods. He had described politics as soft warfare, the elegant duel of lightsabers instead of the thunder of turbo lasers. Glancing over at Borsk Phalia, Akbar could see a feral gleam in the Bothan Council's violet eyes. The Bothans thrive on this soft warfare, he thought. Mon Mothma nodded toward the Elam counselor who had been speaking. Thank you, Varanephra, for bringing us up to date on the economies of our newest world. Next on the agenda is the matter of Bacta. Borsk, you have a point to make? The Bothan stood.
The recent mission that liberated the supply of Bacta and brought it here to Coruscant was, of course, a great victory for us, and a great boon to the people here. For that we owe much thanks and praise to Admiral Akbar and his staff. Still, the question is, how do we curtail black market trading in Bacta?
If we send stormtroopers into private homes to deprive the occupants of factor supplies, we will hardly endear ourselves to our people.
Mon Mothma shook her head. No such thing is advocated. She picked up her comlink. Please send Boru in,